News Talk 590 WVLK. Ray Larson just walked in here with a snappy sport coat and a smile on his face. What's up this morning, sir?
Well, I like the sport coat, but I don't smile much.
You're not too much. You kind of had a smile on your face this morning, though.
Yeah.
It's very unusual, though, we might say. What's up this morning on the show?
Well, John Reese is the was a former commissioner of the Kentucky prison system, and I've been trying to get him on the show for a long time, and he finally has. He's a consultant around the country, and he's coming
and
on.
Consultant for prisons?
Yeah, he wants to work. I want to talk about the problems that are facing prisons, especially in light of this fellow in Colorado who had their prison system was assassinated.
Yeah.
You know, for example, what are some rehab opportunities for people in prison? What about drugs, weapons, cell phones, pen pal dangers, that sort of thing that go along with prisons? I think it's going to be interesting, and I hope everybody else does. Okay.
That's coming up 9 to 10. Good morning. Welcome into the 9 to 10 show for this Friday. It's American DA Live with Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson on this Forensic Friday morning. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Jack.
Brought to you by Landscaper's Corner at 1305 Old Frankfort Pike. Just arrived at Landscaper's Corner, Triple Crown Elite Grass Seed. The grass seed perfected for our area. Call Landscaper's Corner at 859-225-9433. Before we get on with our subject and guest today, I'd like to ask you a little bit. I know there's not very much you can say about cases that are open, but we did have a homicide in our city this week. Do you know off the top of your head how many that is for this year?
You know, I think it's either three, maybe it's three.
Three for the year.
It may be four, but I think it's three.
And the suspect was apprehended in Ohio?
Yes.
And now what happens?
Well, he'll be extradited if he doesn't agree to extradition, and we get him back here. Our robbery homicide unit is a good one, and typically they have a clearance rate, which means that they solve murders in Lexington well over 90% of the time, when the national average is somewhere between 60% and 65%.
Wow, that's great.
And Detroit, which is the standard for not doing it right, is somewhere in the neighborhood of 30%. That's because people don't have confidence and don't come forward and give information.
And they're also scared to death.
That's the point.
But this particular homicide, I know you were there on the scene, and isn't that a little bit rare?
No, we get called to the scene of...
Well, I know your office does, but isn't it rare for you to go?
No, I'm the guy that gets the call.
And I see.
And I go.
I see. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, that there's nothing, you can look at all the videos, all the photographs you want, but there's no substitute for actually seeing the lay of the land and that sort of thing.
Has this person been charged?
Well, he's been arrested.
Yeah.
The suspect.
I understand.
And I got to say this, that it's only a charge.
Right.
And he's innocent until proven guilty.
Absolutely. And we always make that abundantly clear.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So tell us about our guest, and it's going to be an interesting subject this morning. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes. John Reese is the former commissioner of the Department of Corrections in Kentucky, and he is retired, and he's a friend of mine and is very knowledgeable about the corrections business.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been after him and after him and after him to come on and talk with us, and finally got him. John, welcome.
Thank you very much, Ray.
Now, are you on a cell phone or a speaker phone?
Yes. Do you want me to pick it up?
Yes, please.
Here we go.
Come on, John.
Is that better?
Yeah, there we go. That's better. Good morning, John. How are you, sir?
Fine, fine.
Good. Ray tells me you're now a consultant.
That's correct. I have my own consulting business in the corrections area.
And to whom do you consult, and what kind of consultation do you give?
Oh, various types, various corrections agencies. I do some expert witness stuff. Consult with a couple of companies, try to help people that want to get into the corrections industry. That type of consulting.
It's a growing industry, unfortunately, isn't it?
Unfortunately, it is. I first got into the business in the summer of 1967, between my junior and senior year at UK. And since then, the growth has been astronomical.
Well, and of course, that reflects the growth in crime. That's what that reflects, and the fact that the public has insisted that people that violate the law or commit crime should somehow pay some sort of consequence, and sometimes incarceration is the way. Now, John, give us a little bit of a history of your career in the corrections business.
Well, I, as I said, went to the University of Kentucky, and after graduating from there, I went to Florida State and got my master's in criminology and corrections administration. I came back and worked at LaGrange, and then went to central office in Frankfort, and then out to Oklahoma for a couple of years, and then back as warden at LaGrange when they had the federal consent decree.
Now, what does that mean?
Well, the facility was it was very overcrowded. This was a period of the early 80s, and federal judges across the country were involved in improving the operation and the conditions of confinement in prisons in every state. But we were able to get the facility out from under the judge's order and control and move forward with that, and got the facility accredited a couple of times, and then I went to work for Corrections Corporation of America, a private corrections company, and worked for them for approximately 13 years.
What's a private corrections company?
It's a company that runs prisons. It's a corrections corporation is a publicly traded company and operates prisons all across the United States.
I didn't know there was such a thing.
Oh yeah. Yes.
Kentucky.
They do it in Kentucky?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Kentucky has several private facilities.
And what's the advantage of that?
From my perspective, probably the biggest advantage is competition. It makes everybody better. When you have a single governmental agency as the only agency operating something, they tend to get stale is probably a good word. But competition makes any activity, any organization better in my respect. It's less expensive. Construction is during the 80s and 90s up until recently, you know, there was a lot of construction going on in the corrections business, and private organizations can build a facility so much faster and so much less expensive than government can. Mm. Government's very, very slow and bureaucratic.
Now, typically, it costs a lot more for the government to build something than it does for the private industry to do it.
Well, it does, and then the other factor is that when the private sector builds a facility, they look the cost of operating a facility is about 65 to 70% staff. That, and corrections is a very labor intensive business, and the design of the building impacts the staffing of the building exactly. I mean, that's what causes changes in staffing is how the facility is built and the design of it. And so when the private sector builds a facility, they build it in a way that they think will be the most efficient and economical way to operate it.
Well, that's an excellent example is the Fayette County Detention Center. When they have what they call pods, and they have one person that sort of manages that pod. And there are any number of inmates there. John, I want to talk a little bit about with the in the news has been this assassination of the head of the correction system in Colorado, which probably creates shivers up and down the spine of corrections officers and corrections officials all over the country. Tell us a little bit about what you know about that and what kind of concerns that causes for somebody like you who knows a lot about it.
Well, I knew him through the Association of State Corrections Administrators, and a good man. It's a very tragic event. It does bring to light the dangerousness, potential for danger, I guess, is the best way to put it, for this this field of work. He was assassinated. The motive, I don't think, has been fully determined yet. The individual who committed the murder is now dead. Was shot by a police officer in Texas after a running gun battle outside Fort Worth. He was a former prisoner, released earlier this year at the completion of his sentence. He was a problem prisoner while in prison, a member of a white supremacy gang, and got into several different behavioral situations while he was in prison. I think he assaulted an officer one time. Spent a great deal of time in administrative segregation, what the news people often refer to as solitary confinement, but a place where there's specific controls put on an individual so that he can't hurt other prisoners or staff.
Going to take a break. If you have a question for us, we'd love to hear it. 253-5959. Touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere. 1-877-777-0590. Or email jackpatty@wvlkam.com. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson in the studio. John Reese is a retired commissioner of the prison system here in Kentucky and now a consultant. And he is our guest on the phone.
John, the... there are a lot of cases. I'm always amazed at how people smuggle things into prisons or that sort of. I know that when people are in Lexington, sometimes people are picked up for drug charges, possession of drugs. And I'm telling you, when they get them to the detention center, some of the there is no body cavity that is free from hiding drugs.
And they had them anywhere on or in the body, and not just drugs. Cell phones are the same way, or the SIM card that's in a cell phone. In a lot of prisons, they'll have maybe two or three cell phones in an area, and they'll hide them, take them apart, and hide them. But they'll have multiple different SIM cards so that. Different people can use, you know, the SIM card has all their information on there, phone numbers, names, contacts, that kind of stuff, and they're almost impossible to find.
Now, you said something that I did not know, and that is it's against the law to jam cell phone transmissions.
That is correct. And that would be the easy, most cost-effective way of controlling cell phones, and in other countries, that technology is being used. United States law precludes cell phones from being jammed in this country.
But we have the technology to do that. It's where you could jam the phones in the prison system. You just can't do it legally.
That is correct.
Well, that seems like a no-brainer to me.
Well, it's been an issue, particularly in Congress, over the past probably 8 to 10 years. There was a murder that was authorized up in Maryland 8 or 10 years ago through a cell phone gang cell phone, and a hit was put out, and an individual was murdered. And that really got some political attention, and the Senate has addressed it a couple of times, but there's a lot of opposition to introducing cell phone jamming technology. They're afraid that once the technology is in this country that it could spread. And actually, some law enforcement agencies oppose jamming because they're afraid that ultimately they could be jammed.
Mm. Well, okay.
You and I would agree, Ray. It mm-hmm. makes no sense. I had, when I was a commissioner, I attended the American Correctional Association meeting, and they had a company that was there from Israel just showing the technology. And for $15,000 or $20,000, you could buy this piece of equipment and jam an institution. The technology today that's being gradually introduced across the country is over $1 million a facility to capture the, basically set up your own cell station, cell tower within the prison, grab the phones, and then render them useless. I don't understand it, but it is the law, and from what I've seen the past 10 years, the law is not going to be changed.
Well, that's what we call our government in action. What about gangs in the prison system?
Gangs are an issue. They're predominantly in some of the larger states, California, Texas, up and down the East Coast, but Kentucky has gangs.
What do you have to do? What do the wardens of the various institutions have to do to deal with gangs and the problems that they? First of all, what kind of problems do they
create?
Well,
you have the same problems that gangs present. In the community, they want to control contraband drug traffic. They want to control other aspects of the prisons and their quote turf. And so you have to basically hold each individual prisoner accountable and develop an intelligence system so that you know what's going on. You need to be able to identify your gang members. That's why taking photographs when individuals come into jail and prisons of all their tattoos and markings so that you can know who's a particular who's in a particular gang and who is not. And because intelligence is gang intelligence probably is one of the bigger requirements, knowing what's going on and stopping problems and stopping trouble before it develops.
Tell me about we're continuing to prosecute more and more women in at least in our court system. How is the prison system dealing with I guess the influx of more female criminals?
Well, when I started in this business 40 years ago, Kentucky had one women's facility, KCIW, and it had less than 100 prisoners in it. And quite frankly, it was being operated like a girls' school. Today, Kentucky's has over 2,000 women incarcerated and operates two different facilities. Just took over Western Kentucky facility, a larger facility, medium security facility down near Eddyville, turned it into a female facility in addition to KCIW, which now has been expanded numerous times. In addition, you have women being held in the jails, halfway houses, and under probation and parole supervision. It's as in everything within our society over the last 30 to 40 years, equal rights for women and equal opportunities for women, unfortunately, has also included opportunities for substance abuse, opportunities for criminal activity.
Do they have the same gang issues that got that the men do?
In some jurisdictions, they do. Not so much in Kentucky, but in states that have large Hispanic populations and Hispanic gangs, they do have women members.
What about something called supermax prisons? What? Tell me what those are and why. What does that mean?
Well, they're facilities. Kentucky doesn't really have a supermax facility. Eddyville's there is a maximum security facility. Little Sandy and Eastern are high medium security facilities. But within Eddyville, there's a behavior control unit in addition to their segregation housing and their administrative segregation.
Wait a minute. Behavior control unit. Boy, that's some euphemism for something. Tell me what that means.
It's a euphemism for 23 hours a day confinement in the cell, 1 hour a day out for showering and recreation. Individuals who have shown to be extremely violent, dangerous, not only in the community but in the prisons themselves, are classified and placed in this type of situation.
All right, we're going to take a break real quick here and be right back. If you have a question, 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T, toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, or email jackpatty@wblkam.com. Back with Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson. John Reese is retired now as a commissioner of prison system here in Kentucky and works as a consultant. And, John, I want to ask you, you're uniquely qualified to answer this question, having spent so many times inside the system, and now you're sort of on the outside, even though you're still involved. How is our prison system doing? What are they doing right, and what are they doing wrong?
Well, what they're doing right, particularly in Kentucky, I'm focusing on Kentucky, is their accreditation. The institutions began getting the facilities accredited through the American Correctional Association back in the 80s and have continued to maintain that as standards have evolved using the latest best practices of an operation. And as a result, security is better. The prisons are safer. During the 70s and the 80s, violence within the institutions was quite high. You had numerous assaults, murders, disturbances of various types, hostage instances. And over the years, corrections facilities have gotten much, much better in that perspective.
What are they doing wrong?
I think you have to continue to focus on improvement and reducing cost, getting the facilities operating more efficiently, getting better success with educational programs and drug and alcohol counseling. You can never rest on your laurels, and sometimes in government, that happens in that people become comfortable, they become relaxed, and there isn't the pressure to continue to improve. I believe that if an organization isn't improving, then it's going backwards. And so I think you have to keep the pressure on and demand accountability, not only in what you're doing right, but also improving what you're doing incorrectly.
I've got an email from Jermaine who says, why does it take so long after sentencing for an inmate to be transferred from the local county jail to state prison? We were told there would be a 30-day evaluation period, and that was in October. Steve Lee is still in Greenup County Jail for the murder of Cricket Lanham.
Well, he is on a waiting list to get into the reception center at in Oldham County, and those prisoners are called in based on several different factors. One, if they're creating problems within the jail, They're brought in quicker. If they have serious medical issues, they're brought in quicker. If they're not presenting a problem and are capable of being handled in a particular facility, local facility, and not not creating security risks, then the wait can be several months.
I see.
Let me ask John. I got half a dozen things left to talk about, but we don't have time. Younger violent criminals. What are we going to do with these young thugs that commit these real serious violent crimes?
It's a sad state, Ray.
Well, I got that
violence,
part.
Violence in some communities among young individuals get involved in drugs. Their value of life is just not there, and the only thing that you have to hold them accountable. So hold them accountable seriously. Just not tolerate it. Have the community help. The community has to accept some responsibility. Also, they have to work with the police when a crime like that takes place. In some places, even in Kentucky, getting information to help solve a crime is very difficult for the local law enforcement.
I got one. I keep reading about how some of these terrorists down in Guantanamo Bay have gone on a hunger strike, and so the question, I guess, is okay.
So what? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, kind of. So tell me what that kind of creates, because you got about 40 seconds to answer this one.
I'm not sure I can, but hunger strikes, particularly among terrorists, are a problem. There's no question. And in order to in your normal prisons, you don't have serious hunger strikes very often. Three or four days, and then you find out somebody's passing them candy bars.
Ah, and John, we're out of time, John. Thank you very much for being with us this morning, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, Ray.